The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
The temperature rising. I was on the East Coast until last night and was in Boston for a record-breaking heat wave. And Friday, the thermometer got up to about 104. What I saw, I heard it got up to actually 106 in some parts of Boston. They are not used to that weather in Massachusetts, nor are they used to it in Maine, where we were also traveling for the last 6 days. So clearly something's going on with the weather. Everyone's talking about it. But what can we do about it? Well, that is the subject of our first segment. Going to be interviewing the head of one of my favorite climate organizations, the Citizens Climate Lobby. They're all about fees and dividends as a much more viable alternative to cap and trade. We're going to hear from Mark Reynolds on the exciting work that they've been doing lobbying in Washington. And then we're going to hear from a group that also inspires me a lot. It's called Empowered by the Light. They are bringing solar power to poor people in Zambia to light up their lives a little bit. We'll speak to the head of that organization on his way to go back to Zambia. We're going to catch him at the airport before he takes off. And then we'll also hear some encouraging news, some public opinion polls showing there is strong interest in funding of public lands, and that is just one of the many items on the chopping block in Washington stalled budget talks. So now, without further delay, we're going to get to my first guest, Mark Reynolds, who kindly joined us again after last week's technical problems. Mark is the executive director of Citizens Climate Lobby. Mark, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Well, 1 week later, you probably have more news to tell us about. You guys do not waste a day in terms of your efforts to bring solutions to the powers that be in Washington on climate, even though it certainly does not seem, with all the talk about the debt ceiling, that CO2 emissions are on their mind. But, of course, those of us who think, you know, with a green brain and see the world through green glasses, probably you, too, think when they're talking about debt ceilings, we're thinking about, you know, what is the ceiling, what is the CO2 max, and you know, what are we going to do to avoid getting to there and having further extreme weather and climate chaos, which, you know, we're continuing to see record-breaking heat this summer after a spring of, you know, record-breaking tornadoes and hurricanes and floods and fires and droughts. Oh, me, oh, my, what's happening? So tell us some good news, Mark. Tell us what the Citizens Climate Lobby is achieving. I was thrilled to sit in on a nationwide conference call about 3-4 weeks ago and very impressed once again with the progress you're making in reaching out, you know, on a bipartisan basis to legislators to talk about what just might work.
Yeah. And as you were mentioning, the talks for the debt talks, I think, you know, everybody is really interested in getting that behind us, because without that being done, it's hard to get any issue up in front of people. So it is important that they get something done on the debt limit, because they're a one-issue town right now, and we need them to be able to deal with more than one thing at a time. And certainly, if we don't solve what's happening with the climate, it makes a lot of the other things irrelevant.
All the talk about and bandwidth with, you know, the health care reform, that took up 2 years, and now the budget talk's been going on for some time. It's like, when are we going to get to Mother Nature, who seems to be trying to get our attention?
Right, and the thing about Mother Nature, which is different with other issues, is physics doesn't negotiate. So, you know, the science isn't going to say, well, too bad you had to spend so much time on health care and the debt ceiling, so we'll give you a little bit of a break. So we are dealing with
something. So why are we playing politics with the planet, we might ask, and in fact we do.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, in terms of what you meant that is encouraging is last month we were in Washington, D.C. for our international conference, and we did make over 140 visits on Capitol Hill. And in addition to that, the Department of Energy, State Department, and some other NGOs, talking to them about what needs to happen. And behind closed doors, we got a lot more receptivity, particularly from Republican offices, than people would imagine. And I think a lot of that has to do with, because you mentioned that we have been promoting for a couple of years a fee and dividend approach. And part of our reason in constructing that was we watched the process of Waxman-Markey being passed by the House, and then we looked over at the Senate and couldn't see any way that they would come up with 60 votes for anything. So we looked to see if there was a way of approaching the legislative solution that could get votes across the aisle. And so what we have been advocating for a couple of years now is that you put a straightforward fee on carbon, and then rather than the mechanism being trading permits that you would sell, rather we just put a straightforward fee and then give all the money back to American households. And we think that's important for several reasons. One is many Republicans have signed a tax pledge saying they won't vote for any climate bill that increases government revenue. And if you recycle all of the money, you can have them honor their pledge and still vote the right way. Two is, we think it's really important that in solving the climate crisis, we don't do it on the backs of poor and middle-class households. And if you recycle all the revenue from a climate bill, then at least 70% of American households would get a monthly dividend, green check, pollution check, whatever you want to call it, pollution fee, that would be bigger than their increase in energy cost. The third thing is, we think that if we offer a solution that says, listen, all we're going to do is make carbon-based fuels a little bit more expensive, that there are a lot of banks and entrepreneurs and venture capitalists who, if they could see a predictable price on carbon, would realize they're going to make a lot of money on wind, solar, geothermal, renewable energy, and they'll come flying off the sidelines. So we like a predictable, steadily rising price, but also where people who want to invest in renewable would see that they would make money on it. So we were very well received with that concept back in D.C., and certainly the opportunity in this Congress might be bleak, but I think we're laying the groundwork to get something done in the next Congress.
And in fact, corporations and even some voices in industry are asking for, you know, just like, tell us what it is. Whatever it is, we can live with it, but we need to plan ahead. And
yeah.
So they really are asking for structure and something that, you know, is going to stick.
Yeah, and one of the most interesting discussions we had like that was we have a group in Salt Lake City, Utah. There's a big copper mine there called Kennecott, one of the largest employers in the valley, who is owned by Rio Tinto. Rio Tinto is one of the largest mining organizations in the world, including mining coal. And when our group in Salt Lake approached Rio Tinto about would they be interested in putting a price on carbon and recycling it back to households, they were way more interested than we thought. And in fact, we've gotten as far as the CEO of the Minerals Management Division, who said that makes a lot of sense for industry, and the next step would have to be where headquarters are in London. But they have been way more receptive than we initially thought they'd be.
I understand you also met with Michelle Bachmann's team when you were back east in D.C.
Yeah, I wasn't in that meeting, but our group did, and you know,
how'd that go?
It actually went better than expected.
Considering she's the one who wants to abolish the EPA and doesn't believe
right.
climate change is a real threat.
Yeah. We've
like
had a lot of interesting
partiers.
Meetings. Yeah, we've had a lot of interesting meetings with people like that. You know, our group in Norman, Oklahoma has also been over to Senator Inhofe's office, and we visited with Senator Inhofe's office again in Washington, D.C. I think because of our approach, we've had more success with people like that than many other environmental organizations. Because our approach is non-confrontational, because we don't go in there and immediately try and attack people where we think they're wrong on the science. You know, the science has been settled for at least 30 years on this. We always start by looking for where we can find common ground with people. And even if we disagree on a lot of different policy issues with people, they're human beings, and we can find some commonality. So while the aide of Congressman Bachmann said that she did not agree with our volunteers on the science, there was a really healthy discussion where she agreed that she would come to another presentation when she was back in Minnesota. So, you know, one of the funnest meetings I think any of our groups have had was the initial meeting with Senator Inhofe, you know, who's told anybody who will listen to them that global warming is the biggest farce ever put upon the American public. Well,
Al Gore
the meeting was supposed Yeah, biggest hoax. So, you know, the meeting was supposed to be 20 minutes, and it was an hour long. And on the way out, our group down in Norman, Oklahoma, is made up of faculty members of the University of Oklahoma, and they were walking out with a young aide who said, you know, people think that Senator Inhofe's a bad guy. He's really not a bad guy. He said, people think that Senator Inhofe eats children. He does not eat children. So, you know, we keep a pretty detailed research form on every member of Congress, and Inhofe's is the only file that under the category, does this senator eat children, we have checked off the box. No.
but he's not exactly providing a more stable climate for their children, for the children's future, not to mention grandchildren and beyond.
Right, right.
They may not eat
we get our basis of our approach for dealing with politics is from Gandhi. And it's not just because Gandhi is an inspirational leader, but because the magnitude of what he accomplished. And we take the point of view in dealing with the climate that it's really like getting the women the vote or ending slavery. And in this case, coal and oil can spend so much money. But, you know, Gandhi always appealed to people's humanity. One of my favorite anecdotes about him that really expressed what we're trying to get from him is before he went to India, he was in South Africa, and he asked for a meeting with General Smuts. Smuts was the head of the South African army. So in the meeting, there's Gandhi, what, about 5 feet tall in that little white thing he used to wear? And there's Smuts, big man, over 6 feet tall, in his full military uniform, and Gandhi comes in and he says, "I'm here to tell you that I intend to oppose your government." Smuts looks down to him and says, "Really? Anything else I should know, Mr. Gandhi?" And Gandhi says, "Oh, yes, I intend to prevail." And Smuts looks down to him and says, and how exactly do you plan on doing that?" And Gandhi said to him, "With your help." So that very much epitomizes that we think that if we can include the Bachmans or the Inhofs at the table at how we solve it, it gives us a better chance of solving this than only talking to the people who agree with us on the science.
Absolutely. But in you're cautiously optimistic you can do that, because right now, if you read their positions on climate change and environmental legislation, they're just all against any kind of government regulation pretty much across the board.
Yes. Yeah. So we are optimistic about it, and because there are so many reasons that people can vote for climate legislation and never have to admit that they're wrong on the science. We're not going to force them to admit that they disagree with what the National Academy of Sciences says or the Scripps Institution of Oceanography or every leading thinker on this subject. We don't see any benefit in trying to back them into a corner they've already gotten themselves in. But because there is so much potential economic benefit and job growth in renewable technologies, and we're sitting around watching China and Germany get all the benefit of that growth right now, and because everybody agrees we can reducing our dependence on foreign oil increases national security, we think there are plenty of narratives that people who have, you know, gotten themselves into a position that it won't be easy to get themselves out of with the science, that they can still vote the right way.
Okay, and do you feel that this is something that is going to be top of mind in the next term and under the next president? I mean, we have waited for so long during the Bush years, 8 years of, you know, frustration and anger with what was going on with our environment and climate, action on climate change, and then, you know, with President Obama having good intentions, and we do believe understanding the problem, but getting bogged down with health care and now the debt. What happens if we don't make, you know, green issues a factor in the next election? If people, if Americans don't vote for legislators, a president, you know, any politician at whatever level, you know, that really understands the very complex and urgent ecological crises that we're facing?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely essential, and I was just I spent last week in Iowa starting some groups back there, and part of their reason for wanting to be part of the Citizens Climate Lobby team was because they wanted to influence the Iowa caucuses, and they wanted to have a respectful way of getting people on the record of saying what they believe about the science and what they believe about how they can solve it. So it is going to be really important that we all work very hard in the upcoming election cycles. And that being said, I do think that the president has probably made, I have nothing to corroborate this, but I think he's probably made a political calculation that this best waits for after the election cycle's over for him, and that it'll be at the front of what he's going to do at the beginning of the next term if he's reelected. I think that's the political calculation that he's made. I don't have anybody from his office or campaign team or the State Department where we've had meetings who will corroborate that, but that's just outside looking in.
Okay. And you have a very good explanation of what the dividend is all about on your website. I believe you have a frequently asked questions page or somewhere on your site. It really lays it out what it is. I'm wondering if you can point people to that. And then also, what kind of opposition are you getting? What are the concerns that are being raised? Because certainly there will be some.
Yeah. So if anybody who went to citizensclimatelobby.org, there is a link to a proposed legislation that's 2 pages long that is a fee and dividend approach. When we first put it together a couple years ago, one of the things that we were happy about was that Dr. Hansen went out on the Capitol Mall on Earth Day and said this is the exact right legislative solution. So we felt pretty happy that the person that we think has really been the leader of this movement for a long time said this is the right way to go. In terms of people who oppose it, there's some people who oppose anything being done, and there's been some very solid funding by the oil industry to certainly send some mischief out in the world in general, thinking that there's no problem. But in terms of legislatively, people who oppose this, the only game in town for a long time was cap and trade. And there are some people who, because that's the who they kind of rode with initially, have failed to see that that's failed 4 times in the Senate. And if something's failed 4 times in the Senate, it probably doesn't have a way of getting through there. So there's some people who think cap and trade is the only possible approach, and I think that's a lot because it was the only game in town for so long. Now, I understand from the cap point of view of a cap and trade approach why people would be for that, and I think it's a great idea. That is, you say, we are definitely going to limit the amount of emissions. So I have no argument with that. There's 2 pieces of the cap and trade bills that have been proposed that we have had problems with. One is the trading component and the potential swings in energy prices that could create. We don't think that's good for anybody, for speculators who are going to buy energy futures and derivatives, that could potentially have huge swings in both increase and decreases in price. But the other piece that we've been most uncomfortable with is the offset provisions. And, you know, essentially offsets say instead of paying a fee to pollute, what you can do is agree to fund offset projects, which could be something like agreeing to not cut down a piece of the Amazon forest. Well, nobody wants the Amazon forest to be cut down, but we can't find any way of verifying that offsets would actually work, or that if someone intended to cut down the Amazon forest, either to clear land for farming or to get paper, that need still wouldn't be met. So even if you say, I'm going to protect this piece, someone is still going to cut down another piece. So we found that to be essentially a dishonest way of trying to deal with the issue. So we think something that is completely transparent is the easiest way forward, in that you just put a fee in place and you give all the money back, just like people get a Social Security check. So we have some people who think that a cap is the only way to go forward, and I'm not in any way opposed to the cap. It's just that everything that trading and offsets brings into play that we're uncomfortable with.
Wonderful. And if people want to find out how to join the Citizens Climate Lobby, how can they do that, Mark?
They could go directly to citizensclimatelobby.org. There's information, both how people can contact us by email, by phone, we have an introductory call the first and third Wednesday of each month that people could join, or, you know, the first Saturday of each month we have a call with a guest speaker, and they would be free to call in on the 800 number for that also.
That's great, and I want to let you know, and our listeners know, that we did, in fact, after much talk and much steeping on it for about a year, launch our first green tea parties 2 weeks ago, and Rachel Guinness, the head of the Marin chapter where I live, came and gave an excellent presentation about how the Citizens Climate Lobby has a solution, certainly a roadmap that just might work, and the best one I've heard, and so people were very enthusiastic about that.
Great.
Got a great
congratulations on getting that launched also. That's outstanding.
Thank you. There just has to be a platform and an outlet for those of us who are, you know, tired of waiting on the sidelines for Washington to, you know, get to these very urgent climate and other ecological challenges. And we have to have a voice leading up to the election. And we also need to, we think, educate and engage people, you know, at the community level. So we're doing it, you know, one house at a time, and also just trying to get messages out that these extreme weather events are most likely connected to climate change. We, you know, ignore them at our own peril, and that the most important, there are solutions out there, because I think if you just scare people and get them agitated and don't give them something they can do about it, of course, that just leads to apathy, negativity, and despair. but
right.
not necessarily the case as long as they check out solutions like what the Citizens Climate Lobby is putting forth. So I really appreciate your being with us. I want to encourage listeners to go check you out. Thanks for joining us, Mark, and I'll talk to you on the next national call.
Okay, thanks a lot, Betsy.
And when we come back from a very short break, we're going to be inspired by the head of an organization that, through solar power, is lighting up the lives of children and others in Zambia. Stay with us. You'll be very happy to hear about this, as well as our last story, which also has some encouraging news. Americans do care about funding for public land and conservation. So it's an upbeat show. Hope you stay with us on the Green Front. I'll be right back. Somebody's gotta take a phone.